Welcome to the HN Pod, your daily dive into the front page of Hacker News.
Hey there.
It's Thursday, April 17th, 2025. And yeah, we're about to unpack the discussions that really got people talking.
Yeah, always a good mix on HN. And it really filters things in a unique way, doesn't it? You get the stuff that's really occupying the minds of, well, innovators and early adopters.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So today we've got everything from, you know, big tech legal battles to new file systems, AI updates,
yeah,
even managing your own music library. It's quite the range.
Sounds good. Where should we start?
Okay, let's kick off with a big one. A judge has ruled that Google is illegally monopolizing online advertising technology. This came via the New York Times. And yeah, the actual court decision link was there too for the really curious.
Wow, okay. That's huge news in the ad tech world.
Definitely. And stripping away the legalese, it sort of boils down to this. Google's playing like multiple roles simultaneously.
Right. They're representing the publishers selling ad space.
Uh-huh. And the advertisers buying that space.
Yeah. And they also run the auction itself where the deals happen.
Exactly. So that concentration of power, well, it immediately makes you think about potential conflicts of interest, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, if one company controls the supply, the demand, and the marketplace, the opportunity for, let's say, unfair practices is definitely there.
Yeah. And the DOJ and some analysis, I think, from Winston and Strawn pointed to specific things like alleged bid rigging.
Inflating prices, maybe?
Potentially. And market allocation agreements. Basically, things that could stifle fair competition.
So the real tension here is the whole ad tech system just fundamentally broken and needs fixing? Or is this specifically about Google's actions, even if alternatives exist? That's the core debate, I think.
And here's a number that really made me sit up. Apparently only about 60 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Just 60 cents of every dollar an advertiser spends actually gets to the publisher.
60 cents, wow.
So like 40 cents just gets absorbed somewhere in that ad tech complexity.
That inefficiency is a massive point. 40% is huge. Is that level of complexity really necessary, or does it mainly benefit the big platforms who, you know, kind of thrive on things being a bit opaque?
Exactly. And the Hacker News comments naturally had a lot to say about that.
Oh, I bet. All over the map, probably.
Yeah, pretty much. Some were saying, look, the whole system is broken. This ruling is just a symptom. We need a total rethink.
Which ties back to that 40 cents disappearing, right?
Yeah.
Suggests a structural issue.
For sure. But then others were like, hang on, is it really a monopoly? There are other ad tech companies out there.
That's the classic question in these cases. Did they win dominance fair and square with better tech, or did they use anti-competitive tactics?
Right. And everyone's wondering, what happens next for publishers, for advertisers? Will this actually make things fairer, more transparent, or just different problems?
People also brought up the old Microsoft antitrust case.
Yeah, that came up.
Which had, you know, kind of a mixed legacy, didn't it? Some say it helped innovation. Others think its impact was maybe overblown. It just shows how hard it is to predict the long-term effects of these big legal moves.
And you can't ignore the argument that, well, Google's ad money pays for a lot of the free stuff we use. Search, Gmail, Maps, it's all connected.
It is a really complex web, and like you said, these discussions inevitably get political, but we're just trying to relay the different viewpoints that were actually shared on Hacker News, not taking sides, just reporting the debate.
Exactly. Okay, let's switch gears completely. More technical now. DeepSeek has released a new open-source distributed file system called 3FS.
Oh, interesting. Distributed file systems are always a hot topic. What's the core idea?
Well, it seems built around four main types of nodes, each with a specific job. It feels quite modular in design.
Okay, breakdown.
Sure. You've got meta nodes. Think of them as the librarians. They handle metadata, file locations, properties, paths, all that stuff.
Got it. Metadata management. Crucial.
Then MGMTD, nodes the management servers. They're like the air traffic control for the whole cluster. Configuration, node discovery, health checks.
Ah, so keeping track of who's up and running. The blog mentioned a gnat hole punching analogy for discovery. That's kind of neat.
Yeah, helps them find each other on the network. Yeah. And the storage nodes, these are the ones actually holding the file data split into chunks on disks. They mentioned using Rust for the main engine here, the chunk engine, but also a legacy C++ part.
Rust showing up everywhere. And the last type.
Client nodes. That's what applications or users interact with. They talk to MGMTD to find where data is, then to meta and storage to actually read or write files.
Okay, that makes sense. A clear separation of duties. Let's go back to those MGMTD nodes for a second. So they track health via registration and heartbeats, right?
Exactly. A node comes online, tells MGMTD, I'm here, and then keep sending little still alive signals. So the system knows pretty quickly if a node drops off. Centralized monitoring.
Makes fault tolerance easier to manage. And the storage nodes. You said they separate metadata about the chunks from the actual disk operations.
Yeah, that seemed interesting. The Rust chunk engine manages the chunk metadata IDs, size, location, checksums, storing that info in LevelDB, which is a fast key value store.
Okay, so LevelDB for the chunk metadata.
Right. But the chunk engine itself doesn't directly write to or read from the physical disk. It uses these specialized worker processes. There's like an allocate worker for space, a punch hole worker for freeing space, an IO read worker for reads.
Ah, so delegating the low-level disk stuff, that could be good for performance and keeping the main engine focused. Smart architecture.
Seems like it. The blog also mentions CRAQ, that's chain replication with apportioned queries.
Right, for consistency and fault tolerance. Ensures writes are confirmed across replicas before they're considered done. Strong consistency.
Exactly. Now, what's cool is DeepSeek is being upfront about needing more performance data. They admit the current benchmarks are limited.
Well, that's refreshing. Usually it's all world's fastest claims up front.
Right. They actually listed out questions they want to answer.
Yeah.
Like, are HUFI bottlenecks real? Can others reproduce their performance? How does it degrade? Where are the bottlenecks? What workloads suit it best? How does it stack up against Ceph or GlusterFS or whatever?
That's great. Setting realistic expectations, inviting community feedback. Those are exactly the right questions to ask to see if this thing has legs in the real world.
Yeah, and there's already a Hacker News thread buzzing about it, so people are definitely interested.
Good stuff. Okay, where to next? AI.
Yep, let's pivot again. Google's Gemini 2.5 Flash. This generated a ton of comments on HN. Link to the Google blog posts, of course.
Yes, the Flash model. What was the initial reaction?
Initially, a lot of excitement because Gemini 2.5 Pro, the experimental one, was suddenly free. And lots of users were saying, wow, this is a big jump from previous Gemini versions, even holding its own against, like, OpenAI's free models.
Better intelligence, more willing to push back on prompts, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. More engaging, maybe?
Yeah.
But then things shifted a bit. Well, the label in AI Studio changed to Gemini 2.5 Pro Preview. That made people nervous.
Worries about a potential downgrade later, or maybe the final version will cost more. That old bait and switch fear.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Classic tech pattern, right? And performance-wise, some people felt it was maybe a little slower than the AI answers you get directly in Google search.
Interesting. That speed versus depth trade-off again?
Seems like it.
Yeah.
There are also comparisons drawn with other models, like Claude 3.7. Some folks felt Gemini was better structured, maybe better for broader chats, while Claude was stronger on coding or its tooling, like searching files or fixing errors.
Yeah, that fits the pattern we're seeing. Different models excelling in different areas. No single king of all trades model.
Yeah.
Anyway, users are noticing these inconsistencies too.
Definitely. Now, Google introduced this concept of a thinking budget for Flash.
Right, you can control how many tokens it uses for internal processing. What was the reaction to that?
Mixed bag. Some saw it as useful, you know, manage costs, optimize for simple tasks, but others worried. If you set the budget too low, does the AI just underthink things, give rushed or shallow answers?
That's a great point. It's like giving yourself only 5 minutes for a complex math problem. You might get an answer, but is it the right one? Puts more onus on the user to tune it correctly.
Exactly. There was also talk about pricing, comparing it to things like a Form Mini. Some noted it might be pricier than the old Flash 2.0.
But maybe worth it for the performance bump.
That seemed to be the feeling for many, yeah.
Yeah.
People were sharing cool use cases too, analyzing diagrams, OCR tasks. And this idea that maybe these Flash models could enable too cheap to meter AI applications.
That's the dream, isn't it? Though data usage concerns always pop up alongside that.
Always. And here's a big claim from the comments. Some think Google might be silently winning the AI race.
Oh, really? Because of their infrastructure and data advantages.
Yeah, that was the argument. But others push back, saying, well, public awareness of Gemini still feels lower than, say, ChatGPT. And lots of people shared, you know, inconsistent experiences, especially with coding.
Right, the evil genie problem. It does what you ask, but not quite how you meant it. Raw capability isn't the same as a reliable, user-friendly product.
True. The conversation also touched on whether AI is becoming less of a standalone product and more just a feature baked into everything else.
Which makes sense when you see it integrated into search, workspace, etc. It's becoming part of the furniture.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's shift one last time to something maybe more personal for listeners. Using Jellyfin to self-host music as a Spotify alternative.
Ah, The self-hosting dream versus streaming convenience. Mm-hmm. Always a good debate. This came from an article on CoppoliMelio.com.
Yep, shared on HN sparked a lively chat. The core trade-off seems clear. You lose Spotify's algorithms, the discovery features like radio.
But you gain total control and ownership of your actual music files. No subscriptions, no disappearing tracks.
Exactly. And people had tons of suggestions for finding new music without Spotify, exploring other users' playlists, listening to actual human DJs on community radio.
Like FIP, NTS, Radio Paradise, Soma FM, BBC 6, KCRW.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of love for curated radio still.
Definitely. And Bandcamp came up a lot for following artists directly.
Makes sense. Human curation still has huge value. Algorithms miss that serendipity sometimes.
But the butchering of features, as someone put it, compared to Spotify, was a real sticking point. Missing the recommendations, having new releases just appear instantly, that's hard to give up.
And the feeling that Spotify is maybe becoming more of a general audio platform, potentially diluting the music focus?
That came up too. It highlights how entrenched these big platforms are. With features built over years, replicating that yourself is a lot of work.
For sure. What about the practicalities of setting up Jellyfin?
People said it's gotten easier, especially with Docker. Mm-hmm. Talking about transcoding, using Navidrome as maybe a more music-focused alternative.
Yeah, and remote access.
Yeah, using things like Tailscale or NordVPN MeshNet to get to your library from anywhere. The tech side seems less daunting now.
Okay, so setup is manageable, but what about getting the music?
Yeah, the less fun part. Ripping CDs, maybe Blu-rays for high-res audio. Inevitably, talk turns to downloading BitTorrent, the ethical gray areas.
Always comes up. Building a library takes time and effort, however you source it. Audio Bookshelf was mentioned for audiobooks, too.
Yeah, extending the self-hosting idea. But then there's the network effect of Spotify. Sharing playlists, collaborating with friends. That's a big social lock-in.
Very true. Hard to replicate that social discovery aspect on your own.
We also saw talk about hardware. You know, N100 mini PCs, old laptops, Raspberry Pis, and the power consumption of running a server 24/7.
Right, ongoing costs and maintenance. And the mention of Plex's client rewrite issues is a good reminder that even established self-hosted options aren't always smooth sailing.
Definitely a cautionary tale. It all feeds into that philosophical debate, doesn't it? Owning your media versus the own nothing, be happy convenience of streaming. Plus, the frustration when music you like just vanishes from Spotify.
It's a really personal choice, weighing convenience against control, cost against ownership. No single right answer.
For sure. And just briefly, rounding things out, there was a mention of HDR-infused emoji.
HDR emoji? What on earth is that?
Honestly, the snippets didn't give much detail. It seemed like a lighter topic that just caught people's eye. A good reminder of the sheer variety you find on the HN front page.
Absolutely. From deep tech dives to, well, brighter emojis. It covers the spectrum.
So wrapping up this deep dive. We've hit on Google's ad tech monopoly ruling and its potential fallout.
Explored DeepSeek's new 3FS distributed file system.
Navigated latest on Gemini 2.5 Flash and AI user experiences.
And debated the pros and cons of self-hosting music with Jellyfin versus streaming.
Yeah, pretty good snapshot of the kinds of conversations happening daily on Hacker News.
Definitely diverse and thought-provoking.
It really is. And maybe a final thought to leave folks with. In this world, increasingly shaped by these huge tech platforms and clever algorithms, how do we actually balance that convenience they offer against the control we might want over our own data and media?
And as AI keeps getting smarter, faster, what are the unseen trade-offs, the things we maybe aren't thinking about enough yet?
Good questions. Definitely encourage listeners to check out the original threads on Hacker News and keep exploring these ideas.